Hello, hello, and welcome to Art House Garage, the snob-free film podcast where we make art house, indie, classic, and foreign cinema accessible to the masses. I'm your host, Andrew Swetman, and today I want to focus in on that idea of accessibility because we're talking about a pretty challenging filmmaker, Apichit Pong Wirasethakul, and his latest film, Memoria, which is currently playing in Little Rock until September 1st. I'm joined on the show today by Arkansas filmmaker Jack Barr. He'll share his reaction to Memoria as we discuss the film and filmmaker. Stick around. Before we get into the show, don't forget Art House Garage has a Patreon. Sign up today for extended episodes, bonus episodes, video episodes, and ad-free episodes. All that, plus a discount on merch in the Art House Garage shop. Go to patreon.com/arthousegarage today or find a link in the show notes. Okay, back to the show.
It's like a rumble from the core of the earth. Bang! And then it shrinks. Probably 6,000 years old.
Oh.
Yes. Drilled into her head to release bad spirits.
Welcome to Art House Garage. Thai filmmaker Apichit Pong Wirasethakul makes films that are slow, meditative, and mysterious, and he's one of the most interesting filmmakers working today. We've done podcast episodes previously about his films Uncle Bunmi, Who Can Recall His Past Lives, and Cemetery of Splendor. Memoria is Apichit Pong's ninth feature film, and his first film that isn't set in Thailand or made in the Thai language. Tilda Swinton stars as Jessica, a botanist living in Colombia who is awakened by a strange sound and becomes obsessed with figuring out where it came from. My guest today is filmmaker Jack Barr. I had the pleasure of seeing Jack's short film, Jelly, as part of the 2021 Filmland Festival here in Little Rock. We connected on Instagram then, and I'm glad to finally have him on the show today. Jack Barr, welcome to the podcast. How are you today?
I'm doing pretty all right. Nothing to complain about. Thumbs up, 7 up.
There you go. Well, I'm so glad to have you on the show. I remember watching Jelly, and I rewatched it here recently, and I remembered the seriousness of it, like the digital interaction in the center of that movie, but I had forgotten quite how funny it is, and I'm just really impressed watching it again. So I'm excited to kind of meet you for the first time really today to talk about this film. And I also watched your two experimental short films that you have on Vimeo, and you know that I think it's interesting talking about with this filmmaker that we're going to talk about today. Like, in a way, he kind of breaks things down to basics of like light and sound. Like, you can tell he's really into that. And so with something experimental like what you've made, it's kind of doing a similar thing. So I think maybe it's a good fit. But anyway, I'm excited to have you on, and thanks for joining the show.
No problem. First of all, I'd like to say thank you so much for the kind words. Thank you so much for the comparison to our filmmaker that we're going to discuss today, but whoa, different leagues. I'll just say that, definitely different leagues.
Well, I'm excited to talk with you about him because, so as I understand it, this was your first experience with any of his films, correct?
Yes. And I do have to admit that publicly, this was my first film by this filmmaker.
Well, I think it's a cool way into talking about this film because, you know, I'm not like an expert on him or anything. I first watched Uncle Bunmi, Who Can Recall His Past Lives, 2 years ago on the podcast. We did an episode with Omaya Jones, and he's really been the biggest Apichit Pong fan in my life. And he's been on the show many times, and we've talked about Where's Ethical a few times. So we talked about that film and then Cemetery of Splendor. And then I watched both of those at that time. And then I found out Memoria was coming out. I was so excited. And then they announced this kind of strange release strategy for it. So yeah, Neon is the distributor of this film. And they announced that they were not going to put it on home video at all, at least in the United States. Now there is a Blu-ray, I think a Region B you can get if you're in Europe or if you have a region free player. But so for that reason, I thought, okay, maybe this will come to like Dallas and I'll drive to see it. But I didn't think I was going to have access to it. So glad it came to Little Rock. It's still there as of this recording for like 3 or 4 more days. So I'm hoping people can hear this and make it out too. It's playing at the Riverdale Cinema in Little Rock. But I actually had the privilege of seeing the film last year, because one of the perks of being a film critic is they send out screeners. I didn't think they would send a screener for Memoria, but they did. So I'd seen just a DVD copy. So it was much better on the big screen, obviously. And the sound design was such a big part of this experience as well. So that, and then I did watch again last week, Uncle Boo and Me, because that also played with Omaya Jones as part of the Arkansas Times film series, brought it back and it played this past Tuesday. So that was my second time seeing that film. And then now my second time seeing Memoria a couple nights ago on the big screen. So I've seen 3 of his films, a couple of them twice. And I'll say that for me, the experience of the first one was, confounding, mysterious, like, what am I watching? And then I watched a second of his films. I really kind of understood a bit more kind of his wavelength or something. I think it took a second film or second viewing to really kind of grasp a little bit better. But as a newcomer to the films of A Peach at Pong Where's Ethical, I'm curious, what did you know about him coming into this? And then what was your experience? Did anything surprise you about this film? How did you feel about it?
Well, I've been aware of Uncle Boonmi, Who Can Recall His Past Lives, for a couple of years now. That was a really fascinating year at Cannes. So Tim Burton was the jury president then. And there's this great theory I've been hearing about, like the Cannes juries, where every time a filmmaker is the head of the jury, usually their selection for Palme d'Or of that year is a film that filmmaker could not ever accomplish or could not ever achieve. Like, it's kind of like out of their grasp. Yeah. So, and it kind of like makes sense that Tim Burton would choose Uncle Boonmi, Who Can Recall His Past Lives. Mm. Like it's definitely, as far as I know about that movie, it's very, there's a supernatural element to it. It's I kind of choose to be blind about the movie. I only know like the poster. So and the dark figure who I have with the red eyes, who I have to assume is Uncle Boonmi. I mean, for example, along with the theory, there's also like Steven Spielberg, whenever he was the head of the jury, I think the film he chose, or the film that the jury chose, was Blue is Warmest Color, which is, you know, just a very like realist, like 3-hour drama about
not a Spielberg-esque
film. Not a Spielberg movie at all. So I've known about Uncle Boonmi, and I've been fascinated by this filmmaker. Like, I want to see like more of his films, but I just never gave myself the chance to. Whenever we arranged to record this podcast, I rented Uncle Boonmi. I haven't seen it yet, but I'm gonna see it soon. So like, I already know, like, I want to see more of this guy stuff. Yeah. By the way, I'm very happy that you're able to pronounce his name.
I took a lot of practice, honestly.
Great, because I looked it up beforehand and I was like, I give up. So for the rest of the podcast, I'm just gonna call him Joe, because apparently his like English
American nickname. Yeah, yeah.
And apparently it's one like he's embraced, you know, like,
yeah, he calls himself that. I don't know much about Thai, but I know in some Asian languages the surname is first, and so he has called himself Joe A Peach at Pong. As if, but we always say A Peach at Pong. Yeah, we're aesthetical. That took a lot of practice. I literally before I did my first podcast about him, sat in the mirror and was like saying this over and over. It's such a long. It's just not natural for our kind of Western, you know, phonetic speaking. But it's so I'll try not to spoil anything then about the other films.
Great, that thank made. You.
I was going to talk a little bit more about Uncle Boon Mee, but I'll hold that. But yeah, I'll just say Uncle Boon Mee, that was the first thing I had heard of too, I think, because it won the Palme d'Or in 2010. And it just sounded so exciting. And it's not what I expected, but yeah. Well, I'll leave it at that then. So I will say that Memoria is his first film, as I mentioned at the top of the show, not made in Thailand. So most of his films, I believe, are like non-professional actors and are set in Thailand with the Thai language and all of that. This is his first time to break out of that. This film is primarily in Spanish, actually, in English, and has his first non-Thai actor as the lead with Tilda Swinton. And so yeah, I guess my first kind of question about this film is, what did you think of Tilda Swinton's performance here?
Yeah, the funny thing is that whenever I was watching the movie, like I wasn't really thinking about a performance, like, and yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess that's like more credit to her. It's just I was thinking so much about who she is and where she came from. Mm-hmm. Jessica, the character she plays, like. I was just so fascinated by who this person was and why they're mm-hmm. experiencing this and why they choose to not bring up the sounds that they hear. Like, I don't think she says it to anybody. I think she only tells Young Hernan, mm-hmm. The director, the doctor who she tries to get Xanax from.
Yeah.
Or who offers her Xanax, I should say.
Yeah, yeah.
Somewhat offers. And yeah. then... And then older Hernan. I don't think she tells mm-hmm. anyone else, like not even her sister.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Also, going into this movie, like, so the only thing I knew going in was that it's a very slow driving mm-hmm. movie, and a lot of like, I think like jumpy articles were saying like, oh, this is the first film in his career to feature a jump scare. He's never had a jump scare before.
It's like the non-jump scariest jump scare.
I know. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, so going into this movie, I thought we would only hear the thud once.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so it was an immense surprise and pleasure as a viewing experience that like it kept occurring. And mm-hmm. the scene I keep... Also, another thing about this, sorry, I'm kind of going over the place.
No, you're fine.
Yeah. The thing about this movie is that, like, even though I didn't fully understand it, even though I think I have, like, a kind of a grasp on it, is that this is a movie that stays with you.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. like I keep thinking back to it. I keep turning back to it. And I keep thinking about these characters. I keep thinking about the world. I keep thinking about why these characters are experiencing this. And a scene that I keep coming back to is the scene where she joins her sister and like her sister's family, like for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's like the third scene we have where we hear the noise, mm-hmm. the thud, as I'll just call it the thud. And we hear this and, you know, we see Tilda, like,
yeah.
I guess we see Jessica like look around. And her sister like kind of can tell like something's off, but maybe she just thinks that I just love it because like I'm seeing these characters observe each other, and because mm-hmm. and I think this is one of the like most of the scenes in this movie are just one shot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so in this dinner scene, like we're only seeing one angle of the entire scene, so I think Joe is just allowing us to just observe these characters, just interact and just it's very beneficial to the audience that we just get to sit here with these characters in real time and just like see every little movement, see like
mm-hmm.
try to pick up on every single word and just pick up and think about like what our characters are thinking. So whenever Jessica is like looking around and her sister's like kind of looking at her, you can tell her sister is probably just thinking like, oh, she's probably like lost in her head or whatever. And then like the thudding keeps happening during mm-hmm. the scene.
Yeah.
And you kind of see Tilda as Jessica just kind of accept that it's happening.
Yeah.
And just ignore it. Just move past it. She never brings it up. And it's the scene was like a little heartbreaking, honestly. Mm-hmm. What was your reaction to that scene? I guess now that you've seen it twice.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite scenes in the movie. And yeah, it's such a surprise. And then when it happens, I think it happens three times in that scene. And yeah, you're right. The first time I think that goes along with what you're saying about the Tilda Swinton performance, that it feels so lived in. And I think it's the style of the filmmaking too, a lot that like, you don't really think of it as Tilda Swinton, which that was what's so interesting. Cause so as the first like recognizable face for me in any of his films, I was like, oh, I'm going to just think of her as Tilda Swinton, but not at all. And yeah, the performance is so much body language and stuff, like in that scene where she first hears it, realizes no one else can hear it, and kind of decides to go on. And then, yeah, accepts it after the second. I think she like jumps a little the second time. And then it's like, she's just going to accept it. Like you said, yeah, it's really fascinating. And all of that is, you know, wordless, like that she experiences all of that. Yeah, I love that scene. And I think Tilda's really great in it. And I think there's probably not a lot of actors that are, you know, as prominent as she is that could disappear to the degree that she does. You know, I think she's such an adaptable performer. I just saw her the other day in the new George Miller movie too, 3,000 Years of Longing.
I'm trying to see that soon.
Obviously, it's a different, very different style of film, but she is it's similarly that it's kind of a low key performance, but it's, you know, very different than that. It's much more dialogue driven and everything. And this is such a physical, quiet, you know, performance in this quiet movie.
Have you seen sorry to cut you off for a second. Have you seen Michael Clayton?
I've not seen that. No.
Okay, so that's the only film that she has won an Oscar for and like nominated for an Oscar. And it's crazy. It's just like, wow, the Academy actually recognized like a real actress.
Yeah.
She like, so she plays like an American CEO in that, and she gives that character such three-dimensional like flexibility. Like, I mean, whenever we're first introduced to her in the movie, she even though as the movie goes on, you kind of realize like, oh, she's the antagonist. We start out just seeing her alone in the bathroom, and she's having a panic attack.
Wow.
And it just gives like such depth to this character that like, even though like she is evil and she is responsible for like the harm of like all these other characters in the film, like she still is human at the end of the day. And that's just something like as we're talking about, like with this film, like Tilda just gives a very humanist performance to this. Yeah. And the scene with her sister, I think like, yeah, I realized like whenever you said it, like, you know, she realizes no one else can hear the noises with her. Cause before that, like, you know, it's the middle of the night. And then the second time, I think, is whenever a dog is walking by and she hears it. And but great kudos to Joe for like each scene that the thudding occurs. I never expect it. It's never like built up. It's never like, and then it happens, or it's never just like intentionally like misleading you. Like it just occurs. And I spent a lot of time like thinking about this movie, just thinking like, okay, how are they connected? Like is it nature with the dog? Is it the nighttime because they both occur? No, it's completely random. And it really, and I think that's something that I think you can see Tilda like play on Jessica's face, is just like, why is this happening now? And why is it only happening to me? And I really think that drives home like one of these themes I've been thinking about, is just whenever you feel, I'm going to quote like a David Sims article here from The Atlantic, whenever it just feels like you're cosmically out of whack. And I think isolation is definitely, like, it definitely plays a huge part in this film because like she just feels alone in this experience. And I mean, she goes to the doctor just like, is there something wrong with me? Am I going crazy? You know, is this a symptom for someone who's about to die? You know, just like, who knows what's going through our head? And it's just terrifying. Like it's just brilliant. It's brilliant.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. Cause I mean, honestly didn't think about the isolation aspect of it, but I think that's totally valid and such a part of the film that I want to rewatch it and think about. Yeah, like I think that's probably was playing in my mind more the first time I watched it. The second time was interesting, knowing when the thuds were coming, roughly. I kind of remembered. I was more dialed into like the quality of the sound, because, and that's part of the film too, because she goes to the soundboard and tries to recreate it. But hearing it for the first time on the theater speakers, it kind of gets in your bones. Like,
oh,
it's a nice, loud, deep noise, which, yeah, on my like DVD screener copy, it's just not the same. So I'm so glad that it did come here. And it was funny too, to people jumped to the first one in the theater.
Really?
It's so quiet. And I think there's some people that didn't stick around. I think they were like, this is slower than I expected. And they left after a little bit.
Wait, people left?
Yeah. Yeah. The
screen. Oh, man.
It's like, come on, Arkansas. You can do it, Arkansans. You can watch this movie.
I'm just curious, what time of showing did you watch?
6:45. So not super late, but there was a one later, I think. The first time the thought happened, somebody jumped really high. It's so quiet at the beginning and then till they're sleeping, and oh my gosh, and that made me laugh.
I'm happy for that person that they didn't know it was in the beginning of the movie, because that's like all I read about was that like the movie starts with a jump scare. So I'm happy for that person that they just had no idea.
Yeah, it was really entertaining on that level too, and it's just good to see it with people. Honestly, it's kind of a cool, it's just a different experience. I know that was part of the thinking of doing this release strategy, which I've talked a lot about the release strategy with Omaya, and more he's like not a fan, and he's like, I wish more people could see it, and I think I probably agree with him. But in any case, it was great to see it with people. Speaking about the slow quality of it, I think his films are mysterious, and the meaning isn't always like clear, and I think it's very open to interpretation, which I like about it. But I heard this quote recently from a film critic named Mark Cousins, and he's talking about slow cinema almost like its own genre. And there's a handful of other filmmakers today that are kind of working in a similar register as far as like really long shots, slow moving plot, that sort of thing. And he talks about, you know, we're really accustomed to, you know, like shorter cuts and shorter edits, and that moves the story forward. But a lack of cutting, in his words, a lack of cutting can almost hypnotize us. And I think that's really the point with a film like this too. And here's another quote he said about the same thing. If you're used to loving action films, it can be hard to love inaction films. But the best, that's great. And then he said, but the best revive the sense that cinema is a time medium and that patience is rewarding. And I thought that was such a good way to put that. And because films like this, I've been watching a few Hong Sang-soo films earlier this year, and I think it's a similar slow register like this. And yeah, that's exactly it. It's hard to initially. So that's where I hope, you know, as far as trying to make films like this more accessible, I think it's really just adjusting people's expectations. If you go in as expecting an action movie, you're going to be so disappointed and leave after 10 minutes. But if you come in, you know, willing to get on its wavelength and have that patience and think about the time of it all and willing to be hypnotized by it, because I think that's the best way to kind of give yourself over to it. So all that to say, like, yeah, this film can be a bit of a challenge. His films can be challenging. And I'm thinking back to the first time I watched Uncle Boo and Me, I really struggle, I think, a bit more to like, okay, what am I latching onto thematically or anything? So I'm curious for you, was there a theme or any sort of meaning that you were able to discern, or do you have any theories about that kind of stuff? Or if you don't have that, just any favorite moments or any other things about the film?
I'll say this. Whenever I was watching the movie, I unexpectedly had to work like early that day. And even though it was only for like 4 hours, like on the set, like I was just doing prep work. I had to wake up really early that day because I thought I was being called to set. And then turns out, no, it got pushed off by a day. So I woke up at 6 a.m. So by the time I'm watching the movie, I was very tired. And I consciously like turned off my phone and I just forced myself to sit there and watch this and really try to take in all this detail. And it was a very interesting way to watch the movie. Is like, I'm almost like, it's like the feeling of sleep paralysis, but I'm almost forcing it on myself. Like I'm clenching myself to stay, not like to stay awake, but like to stay engaged and not like look anywhere else and not like try to, because sometimes I would think like, oh, why am I thinking about this? That's not related to the film. Like, let me get back to it. So I think something I do with films like this where we're really like holding on a frame for a long time is I like looking around the frame. So I think I was really just like paying attention to composition and just trying to see if there was anything informative in the frame that I could latch onto that could potentially answer what's going on and where these characters are thinking and the environment they surround themselves in. I thought that was so interesting that, you know, even though the lead actress is English, like he didn't set this like in a native like English speaking country, like he set this in Colombia. So already like even our lead character is like kind of in this world that she's unfamiliar with. I keep reading the Wikipedia plot for this movie to kind of like reengage myself, and for some reason it describes her as an expatriate.
I guess that's just like that she isn't just visiting, like she lives there, and like her sister, as you're saying, lives there too. So yeah, it's like she's like fully out of her home and out of her element in that way. Yeah.
So I spent a lot of the movie thinking like, you know, like she's already in this world that she doesn't necessarily belong into, or that she's not native to, you know, like she clearly, because I think there was the scene where she's eating on a park bench with her sister. I was thinking about both of them and I was like, well, clearly both of them grew up like in their like family's country.
Yeah, I think because Scottish.
She's Scottish. Oh man,
maybe that's not true. I don't know. I'll find out.
Wikipedia said Scottish, so I'll believe you. I know you're not lying. You can tell like by both of their accents, like they, you know, they live long enough in their native country that they, you know, are not native to Colombia. So like they both don't belong to this world, but you can tell like her sister is like more adjusted, and like even at dinner, like I was realizing this. I was like, wait, like both her and her sister are like speaking Spanish to each other, but like you know, they're like I don't think anybody at that table like isn't Scottish, so like they're still blending themselves into this world. But I think I think the reason why he had an English speaking person in a country that wasn't even his own is just like to really play further with this element of just like not feeling like you belong in your environment.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, just to confirm, I looked up. She's British. She was born in London and raised in England. So
I knew it.
There you go. But I think that the character is Scottish. I read that somewhere.
Yeah,
it's not clear. I guess maybe that's somewhat in the accent that when she's speaking English. But yeah, it's interesting, like being out of your element. And so I want to talk about sleep, because you mentioned you felt sleepy. I have felt sleepy every time I watch one of his movies because they're so slow. And again, not to spoil anything of his other films, but sleep is like a theme for him. And so there's a lot of people sleeping in this movie. You see she's sleeping at the beginning of the film. She goes to the hospital and her sister's there sleeping. And like
falls asleep mid conversation too.
Yeah, falls asleep mid conversation. Which
took me 30 seconds to realize that she was asleep. I was just looking around the frame. I was thinking about the movie and I was like, oh wait, your sister is just asleep.
And she's also like, she clearly had woken up that morning and talked to her, but had forgotten it. So it's just like about sleep in a way. And then later, obviously there's a sleeping thing by the river near the end. So sleep is like a thing for him in his other films too. And it's actually like medical, people in medical beds sleeping is like a recurring thing in all the films that I've seen. But he also, and this is just something I know from reading about him outside of the films themselves, is that he actually is okay if you fall asleep in his movie. Like he almost encourages it to some degree.
Yeah, I read this. Yeah, he's like, I'm okay with it. That just means that you're so comfortable with the film that you feel okay to sleep. Yeah. I love that. I love that. He just seems like a friendly guy, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's so interesting too. So I think at some point he made like a super long 24-hour film project installation thing where like participants went and laid in a bed and it was like projected on the ceiling. And so it's like, you're supposed to fall asleep. And it's kind of like, what is the experience of watching a film, and is anything happening in your body while you're sleeping while the film and the sound is on? So that's an interesting thing too. And I recently talked about this on another episode with Omaya Jones, but the Film Comment podcast recently had something about the future of attention, and they talk all about this same idea of, they have a filmmaker on who makes very slow movies, and she's also like interested in the idea of like, if you're sleeping in a cinema, there's still sound waves entering your body. There's still light waves hitting your eyelids. Like, and you're also not just staying asleep. You're drifting in and out. So you're catching bits and pieces. So it is, it's like a, it, that's just like a different way to experience the film, which is just an interesting, you know, shift for how we're used to. But I'll say, I think every time I've watched one at home, I've either drifted off or like had to like pause and go back, you know, that kind of thing. But then when I watched Uncle Boon Me the other day in the theater, I'm generally a tired person. I should probably preface with that. I've got two kids. Terrific. I'm just generally like, I can fall asleep anywhere. But I had been walking. So my wife is running for office and I was canvassing earlier that day. So I was like walking around this neighborhood, knocking on doors, talking to a lot of people. My energy was up and I went straight to the movie. And I've tried recently to like key into when I go into a movie, like, is my mind ready, like in the right kind of focus mode? And I just wasn't for this. So I sat there and then after maybe like, and I realized that my mind is racing. I'm not like with a slow movie. I'm not focusing. I'm thinking so much about other stuff, which I don't think is necessarily a bad thing either. I think like the movie in a sense invites that too. Like, what is this making you think about? But anyway, my mind was racing and I started to get sleepy and I was like, you know what? I'm going to let it happen. I think I slept for like 2 minutes and then I woke up and it was like a reset in my brain. I was like, here I am. I'm ready. I'm focused. I'm like at peace. Now I can like do this. And I was like, I'm so glad that I knew that about him, that he's like, I was like, why am I fighting my sleep right now if Joe's okay with it? So then, and that really, you know, then I was ready to go after that. And then I also, watching Memoria, got really sleepy again. But I pushed through for that one. And I'm so glad it wasn't my first time seeing either of those, because then I would be like upset that I'd miss bits and pieces. But anyway, the sleep is a part of it. And I think, so it seems like he's sort of feels there's some sort of like spiritual significance to sleep as well. And this is, again, my theorizing and my kind of pulling what meanings can I find here. But, it, you know, you think about like people take psychedelic drugs to go to another plane of existence, but it's sleeping is actually its own kind of different sort of consciousness that we do every day. So that's kind of an interesting thing. And I think he's just interested in like those human processes of going to sleep. So that's an interesting part of, I think all of his films, and again, without spoiling stuff, people are sleeping in his movies and other movies as well.
You keep saying that. You make me think that like sleep is like a major plot point, and like or like that, like the fact that a character is asleep in like some of his movies is like a huge spoiler.
It's not. You're not. I'm just like trying to give you a blank slate, but like
characters. Does Uncle Boon Me sleep? Does he sleep?
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
Okay, great. All right. Awesome.
Yeah. Yes.
Does he recall his past lives while he's sleeping?
While he's sleeping or while he's awake? That's the question. Really. It's funny. His movies are not really spoiler kind of movies. There's like one thing at the end of Uncle Boon Me that I would sort of be spoilery. And I feel like there's one thing at the end of this movie that sort of would be a spoiler that we can withhold.
Which I was spoiled on.
Oh, you were. Okay.
I was. I guess maybe we're not saying it right away, but the thing at the end of this movie, I was on a thread that was kind of discussing like people are like, oh, people who have seen Memoria, like, what did you think? And I was curious, you know, mm-hmm. I kind of carefully like read the comments, and someone like had a spoiler tag and I clicked on it and they brought up this thing. And I was like, well, that seems so ridiculous. It's so not fitting for this movie. So it can't be true. And I was thinking about that the entire movie. I was like, wait, what if this happens? And it did. And it didn't ruin my experience, but I think it's definitely best if people go in blind, not knowing it. Cause I was telling my friend about that I was recording this podcast, and she was like, oh, I want to listen to it. And I was like, well, there's like one thing in the movie that I can't mention. It won't ruin the movie, but it'd be cool if you didn't know it before watching it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we can just keep this spoiler free probably because we can just dance around it like what we're talking about.
But I would love to talk a little bit older Hernan, but I think we can do that without spoilers.
Yeah. But I can see how if you just saw like that image, you might be like, this is a joke. Right.
This is a prank. I'm being pranked right now.
It is. It's an interesting ending, and really that whole last sequence especially the second time, was like just my favorite part of the movie. But yeah, so as far as like trying to think about like what is this movie about, in a general sort of sense, I think it's sort of just about like being human. And I just the second time I was picking up on all these like human experiences. So there's the sleeping, there's a lot of focus on eating, like a few really intentional eating scenes at the restaurant, like you talked about eating street food in that later scene. We see older Hernan cleaning a fish, and that's such a part of it. But then also art, and I had kind of keyed into this the first time, but like there's so many different art forms included here. We have this guy reads a poem to her near the beginning, and she has a poem that she's written later. She goes into an art gallery, and we see her kind of observing some photography and some paintings. There is a music, there's a couple music things. So obviously there's a soundboard scene. That's such an interesting one. And then he's a musician, and we don't really hear his music, but she listens to it. And then there's this jazz ensemble playing later,
which was great.
Yeah,
which such a great loved moment. It I love, yeah, it.
There's some dancing later, so it's just all kinds of, there's kind of some shots of sculptures and architecture too, so it really brings in a lot of things. And this maybe sounds basic, and there's probably a better read, a more complex read, but it just is like art is part of the human experience, and so this really feels like humans eat and sleep and experience light and sound and experience art, and like these are the things. And actually it's funny, the doctor scene, she brings up Salvador Dali, and it's almost like she's like, you don't need medicine, you just need some art in your life. Go look at this Dali painting we have. So she prescribes art for her. So that was a funny,
well, she also needs Jesus.
Oh yeah, she gives her a tract or whatever.
I was the only person like chuckling at that scene. I was like, of course.
Yeah. I forgot that happened, and that caught me off guard. I was like, oh my gosh, I forgot about that. Yeah. That's so funny. So yeah, just that kind of thing. And so then I was thinking about just connection and empathy. I think because along with that, like the jazz scene, which I love, it's such a collaborative thing. Like they're looking at each other, they're playing off each other, and you just get the sense that like, and it's kind of a good like pandemic movie, and like, you know, the importance of being people.
I was thinking about that a lot.
Yeah. The jazz wouldn't be the same with just one of them, or if they were on Zoom or whatever, like they're in the room together, and that's important. And like, I feel like the filmmaking makes that important, and you can tell like they have to be in this space together to do this. Yeah. I thought that was a cool thing.
This movie is definitely about being human. You know, I'm going to take a wild guess and say that all his movies are very humanist. He seems like he's really interested in just exploring how we go about our lives. Like there's a lot of scenes in this that I'm not sure if they intentionally like don't matter or if they're just intentionally just mysterious. But like I think a lot of this movie is like, you know, if you looked at a person's life and let's say this movie takes place in a week, like in the span of a week, like there's a couple unexplained things that go on in our daily lives that just happen. And you know, most people are not movie characters, and they're not going like, what is this? I have to investigate. Yeah. Like,
what is
it? Like
mean?
She's in the art gallery, and like half the lights turn off while she's there. Mm. And she looks, and you know, we don't really see what she looks at, but I assume she's like looking at whoever may have turned off the light, and you know, there's probably no one there. You know, there probably is someone there, and she just kind of continues looking at the art, you know, because I think the light is like looking just enough at the painting that she can like still look at it. And the bus that kind of
like misfires or whatever
misfires, and the young gentleman who seems terrified and runs away from it. And I spent some time like thinking like, is that scene like parallel to her situation? You know, is that kind of showing like how someone else might react to a loud unexplained noise that they can't figure out right away? Like what would they do? Like this man runs away. He runs down the block, doesn't know what's happening. No one else around him reacts. And, you know, we see Tilda, she just looks over. She sees the bus, you know, we tell that the bus, oh, like, you know, misfired, like it has to pull over. And then she goes on, and I'm wondering if that's Joe in that scene, like specifically saying like, you know, maybe some of the unexplained things in the life, they do have an explanation, you know, like you're not crazy for thinking this, you know, there's something to it. You know, if you just kind of take a step back. And, you know, I feel like he's a very observant filmmaker. I think Jessica is intentionally a very observant person. She's just really patient and kind, and just seems to really just kind of take people in. I love her friendship with Hernan, which I'm sure some people, I read that romance plays a part into this movie, but like, I kind of refuse to believe that her and Hernan would ever be romantic. Like, I think they're just two humans who are just, even though they come from different backgrounds and they have like different interests, you know, like her young Hernan, like he talks about, he's like, oh, my band is, you know, electronico, you know, it's punk, you know, like something that her character probably isn't into. And she, I mean, whenever he tells her band name, or whenever he tells her his band name, like, you know, she kind of laughs at it a little bit. Cause I mean, yeah, it's like, I mean, all punk band names, like, you know, My Chemical Romance, you know, that's not necessarily punk, but you know, My Chemical Romance, like if you went to a local venue and you never heard of that band before and they're performing, you'd probably think like, oh, what a joke.
What is this band name? Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. But even though they come from like these different backgrounds, like they still just, they kind of find where they meet in the middle, like Venn if you look at it like a Venn diagram. And I love that, like, even though they kind of hardly know each other, like, they still are just like, let's go on a trip. Let's explore wherever together. I can't remember. I think this is I was reading this on Wikipedia. I was like, wait, they were going on a trip? I just didn't pick up on it. I don't know.
I think how that played out is he says, I can drive you for this thing. And then I don't think that happens. At least that's how I read it. Like, because then she can't find him.
She can't find him, and he disappeared, and it kind of made me realize, like, wait, the only, like, she's only interacted with him. Like, we haven't seen anybody else interact with this person, and that's one of those unexplained things where, like, there's probably like a really good explanation for it. Like, Hernan, like, probably still is real, and it's just that none of these people in this recording studio know who she's talking about, because they just don't go over there. They don't interact with them. I mean, Hernan seems like a person who's very content being by himself. And I think that's something that Jessica kind of picks up on. I think she adopts, like, as her character goes on, is like, or I think that's always there. It's like, she's very comfortable being by herself. Cause I mean, she goes to that tiny town, like, by herself, and she's just by the creek side, just observing nature, you know, just taking it all in. Just I feel like she's very comfortable with herself, and I think, you know, by this movie being very meditative and it plays out in real time, I think that's what Joe's saying. You know, there's nothing, like, everything in your life is probably fine, and you know, like, even though you may be very unsure of how things are, you may feel very anxious about others, you may feel very anxious about yourself and, like, in your actions and your thoughts, like, you know, it's, you know, you should try to be more comfortable, like, being around yourself more. And so really, I think this movie, I think it's really about being okay with yourself. And I think it's also it's also about, like, seeking human connection and just, like, kind of finding someone who you can bond with. And just, you know, even in the most unexpected places, like this small town, you know, it, like, in this fishing village or whatever, and she meets older Hernan, you know, just in this guy who's, like, you know, years older than her. And the fact that, like, these two characters never met, but they just spend the rest of the movie just talking to each other and just bonding. It was really empathetic. It was a really nice evolution of the story.
Yeah.
I think the story was always going to lead in that direction.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's all really good. And so the question about the younger Hernan and the whether it's romantic or not, that's so interesting, because I remembered kind of thinking that the first time, and the second time keying into that a little more. And it does seem like, even if it's not romantic attraction, there's some sort of attraction between them.
Yes.
Like, they just like themselves, maybe just as friends. But, like, say, and he, like, is extremely kind to her. Like, he offers to buy something for her and offers to drive her this place. And it's, yeah, they've just met and, like, they found a kindred spirit or something. And so, yeah, I think it is. It's about that. So in the same way that we have this collaborative jazz thing, like, these people have a connection in this moment. Like, it's, you know, there's an invisible, they're not touching each other, but there's something in between their brains. It's like, we're working together.
They're connecting sonically.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And there's also, I forgot until, and this I did not remember since the first time, but there's a, it's a really short little cutaway. There's this guy dancing in the street and like some friends, and he's like a good dancer. Like,
probably. Oh, yeah.
And another guy gets up and they have this collaborative little dance and they're like pointing at each other. And it's like, here it is again, this like some kind of unspoken connection that humans can have. It reminds me of, I'm just thinking of this now, but in Before Sunrise, the Richard Linklater movie, she has this great line about, I don't know if I believe in God, but you know, there's something in between us. You know, like there's something between people that connects us. And it, I think it's kind of a similar idea. It's like, there is something that we, so like just a piano by itself is one thing, but then a piano and another instrument together, it's more than just this plus this, it's more than some of its parts. And I think people do that too. And I think maybe that's kind of what he's getting at. So that's a really cool thing. And I'm glad you brought it up. Their relationship. I forgot about also until watching this a second time, the bus moment you mentioned. I want to go back to that briefly because I think you're right. It's sort of a microcosm of the what's happening in the movie. It's like she has heard a thing and she can't explain it and she's frightened and she's obsessed and like, what was that? And by the end, we know what it is. But
it's Uncle Boonmi, by the way. I'm just spoiling. It's Uncle Boonmi. He makes a cameo appearance. It's the Uncle Boonmi cinematic universe.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say the same thing. Cinematic universe. But yeah, and it's just like a microcosm of that. Like he doesn't understand and he's afraid by this noise. And I think it is too. And this is something I've heard him just talk about, like sound in general in this movie and all his movies, I think it's really important. And that has to do with what state you're in too. Like I'd say that all of his movies kind of are that I've seen again that are on sort of a meditative register, and a lot of that is in the sound design. And so this loud thud almost throws a wrench in that. It's like otherwise it's a really peaceful movie, and then there's this thing that's happening that it's like what happens when we mess with that a little bit. I think that's really cool. Another thing I thought about too is this is somewhat related, and it's kind of looking historically, this connection to like people of the past, because her sister is like an archaeologist or something where she's studying this group of people, and like her brother-in-law thinks that these people that are praying for their society not to be found out is why her sister got sick. And that's an interesting thing, and again, like that's kind of thing that happens in his other films as well, where there's like sort of a spiritual some side of reality that again we don't quite understand, maybe like the sound we don't quite understand that but I think he clearly believes in, after seeing a few of his movies, I think that Joe really believes that, you know, spiritual or mystical kind of unexplained things happen, or at least they're interesting to explore in films. But the moment I really loved this second time too was there's a moment where she's in, I guess, this university. I'm not sure where she is, but there's these human bones that these scientists have and have kind of preserved. And the scientist asked her, can you tell whether it's a man or a woman? She's like, I'm not sure. And he said, this is actually a little girl. And this ritual, they drilled a hole in her head because they thought they needed to get the evil spirits out. And she puts on a glove and she's like, she invites her to touch it. And she just touches this hole. And it was such a striking image to me this time, because it's like, she's reaching back through history, feeling the, kind of touching the consciousness of another human in a way, from, you know, centuries ago, which I thought was such an interesting thing. And it's kind of time ends up being a part of this, like connecting to people through different times. Again, without spoiling the ending, I think that's a theme as well. And that's actually something else that is in his other films too. Like the idea of reincarnation is something that is in his other films. Like obviously Past Lives, that's right there in the title of Uncle Boonmi. But like somehow reaching back through history, and like connecting in that way as well. And I thought, I don't think I picked up on that as much the first time, as I did the second time watching this, but yeah. Anyway, the historical stuff I thought was really interesting. I do want to talk a little bit about not the very ending, but just like the last section of the film that also I'm realizing might be kind of spoilery.
Are you talking about the coda?
Yeah, there's the nice coda after the spoiler thing, but then just her whole conversation with the man by the river and kind of some of the things we realize after that point. So maybe we should do a spoiler warning and talk spoilers.
Sure, sure, sure.
With that? Okay, so if you have not watched Memoria at this point, I would say tune out, because there's some interesting stuff at the end that I would like to get into. So, final warning, don't listen on without watching the end of Memoria. Okay, so yeah, so she talks to this man who is Hernan. And so that's interesting too. I think having some context for his other films, I believe that young Hernan actually did disappear. Maybe he was a ghost, maybe he was a spirit, I don't really know, but I believe that it is the same person.
He could have been transferred. I mean, we never saw them like exchange phone numbers. I think they only interact like socially, like they come to each other and they interact. Does this take place in modern day? Do we see a cell phone?
I think we do at the beginning. She shows photos to her sister.
You're right. Okay.
Yeah. So I think it is modern day. But yeah, you're right. We don't actually know when the ending happens. Although I think she says, you know, I heard this sound just the other day. So I'm assuming it is, you know, it's not like she waited years or whatever.
Ending exposition, which I was just thinking about, I was like, wow, he does deliver exposition. And it's like at the very end of the movie, and it's through a radio broadcast. Like, yeah. Or I took it as a radio broadcast. So it could be a television broadcast. It could be Slate News. It could be a podcast. Right, but I took it as like a radio broadcast. No, wait, no. Don't we hear a radio station like intro? Like,
I think we do. And because there's also the talk about antennas and how, in a sense, this is the other spoiler thing I didn't want to divulge, but it's like she herself is like an antenna. That's the what Hernan says to her. He says, I'm like a hard disk and you're like an antenna. And so then when... And so like the title of the film, you realize then what it's talking about. So that's the Spanish word for memory.
Memory, yeah.
And she has this really upsetting memory. And he says, that's my memory. Like you're somehow hearing my memories. And so we've also realized that he has some power to remember things or like pick up on the vibrations of this rock was near an incident. And I can picture that whole incident. And so then the idea that she can hear the sound at the beginning, I think is like a hint that she's somehow special in this way, or she has some sort of spiritual wavelength she doesn't realize, and we don't either until the end. And so she's hearing this memory of, you know, I can't remember exactly what's happening, but she's hiding under the bed, and she wets herself, you know, it's like a kind of traumatic memory. And he's like, that happened to me. And so then he says, and she's really upset, she's crying. And then the line he says is, why are you crying? That's not your memory.
Yeah.
And so that I think also gets back to the idea of empathy. And is that like in this very divided world, which I realize that it almost sounds like, I don't know, cliche or something, but like in this divided world, if we can have empathy for each other, it's like the weirdest, most slanted way to get into the idea of empathy. You can imagine the way this movie is constructed, but it's like, I experienced your memory and like, I feel that they just are connected and are feeling for each other, I guess, in that moment. But then like the antenna idea, like, and it's all in the sound design where she like touches his arm, or when they're touching is like when we hear the radio static and stuff. And it's almost like the antenna idea plays out in the sound design. And then when it stops, when she pulls her hand off. And so then it's actually breaks.
Oh, and at one point, like all sound cuts out. And I think I kind of took that as like, I think either like, well, when I was watching that, I was thinking like, is he like showing her that you can cut out certain sounds, and like, because I think like he cuts out all sound, and then suddenly the rain comes in, like the sound, like in the present, like the sound of like the rainforest and the rain like comes back in. And I wasn't sure to take that as like, as if he was showing her that you can control those noises and like kind of like let in like your memory and like come back into the present, or if that was her realizing that she can do that.
Yeah I'm not sure either. That's a good point. Because then once we get the explanation of what the sound is, which we can spoil now, this alien spacecraft, and it's almost like it's, you know what, I'm realizing it's backfiring. I think it's, and I had that sense. I don't think I realized. It's like, it's something's wrong with it. And I think that's what the noise is, which is just like the bus. I'm just now making this connection.
We said it. Yeah. You said it was a microcosm of the entire movie. And there it is.
I didn't even realize to the degree that it is. But yeah, so. My question to you is, do you think that is happening in the future? I always think future with space stuff, but I think maybe it's happening in the distant past, because what she's able to do, it seems like, is capture memories. And so maybe, and then there's also theories that, you know, aliens were here thousands of years ago before humans, you know, were writing things down and recording stuff. So like, I think that it's probably the past, but I don't know.
Are you talking about the alien ship, like, being like, there and taking off?
So you're
saying that you think that she's hearing the sounds from the past.
Yeah, like that's in my, the present. Is that show somehow, because she's an antenna and didn't realize it at the beginning, she's hearing the sound. But yeah, maybe it is in the present. And, you know,
I think it's the present.
You think it's the present? Wow.
I also don't think it's literal. I should clarify that. Like, I don't think we're supposed to take the alien ship as literally, because, like, I'm not sure about you, but whenever I saw, well, first, because I was spoiled about the alien ship, whenever I saw it, or whenever we cut to that shot, I was like, oh, there it is. Like, I saw it right away. I was like, oh, that. It's real. Well, first of all, I was like, are those two alien heads? And then it was
a ship. Yeah, that's unclear at first until it moves. Yeah.
But whenever that's, you mentioned how I think it plays into the ending, or like the coda, I mean. So we hear the radio broadcast and it talks about how, and Wikipedia helped me with this.
Sure. Yeah, because I was like trying to pick up every word, but I missed some of it. So yeah, help me out.
Yeah. And also one interesting like way the movie ends is that like, even though, so we get this answer, we get the answer what it is, but we still don't know why or how, like why is this happening to her and how did this happen? You know, and I don't think we're supposed to know. I really don't. And the way the rest of the movie plays out after that, it's like whenever that scene happens, it's kind of like, oh, okay, so it's an alien ship. It doesn't feel like satisfying. But this isn't a critique against the movie. I'm just saying, like, I think it's intentionally kind of off-putting. It's like, you know, Joe is like, I've set up this mystery for you, and I gave you the answer, like just so you could have an answer, and. You know, I think he's really challenging the audience. I mean, the whole movie's challenging, by the way. But I think he's really challenging the audience there. Like, you know, if you get the answer you want, is it really satisfying? Like, if you, let's say, like, your lunch gets stolen at work, and you're like, who keeps stealing my lunch? And you finally find out who it is. Like, you're not, like, overjoyed. You're not like, oh, woo, what a relief. You're like, oh, it was that person? Okay.
Yeah.
Like, that's how it is in real life. Like sometimes we get answers, and it's just like, okay, and I don't even, do we even know if Jessica knows that's the alien ship? Is this shot just for the audience? You know, is this her non-knowing this but not telling Jessica? It's just what it is.
I mean, I can tell you what I assumed, but I'm realizing there's like a million ways to interpret the ending. But I assume it was like she has now realized that she's some sort of spiritual antenna, and she's learned to listen to the past, or because it sounds like the way when he touches the rock out by the river and he says, oh, this, the people fought near this, and I can tell you the whole story, it seems like he's seeing it, you know. And so my thought was, she is now, whatever this newfound ability is, that she's able to be like, okay, now I can like really key into what that sound was, and maybe it's, you know, centuries old, and like she's now picturing that happening. But again, that's just my theory, and that may be way wrong, but I really love to, after, so we get the code and we get the radio broadcast, but then there's just these pretty lengthy just still shots, nature of the sky, and it's all overcast and kind of cloudy and rainy, which there's a few different like rain scenes in this, but again, without going into details about his other films, there's another one of his films that ends with kind of a lot of still shots like that, but it's nighttime and it's a city, so it felt similar but very different. And it is almost like we get through, you know, this kind of, I guess intense is not the right word, but the scene where she's in his house and all of that really mysterious conversation happens. And then we see the aliens, and then it's like, we can now be at peace, and like all these really peaceful. And it, like, that is the moment where it really starts to lull you into this, like, it has such a peaceful ending. And that I think I'd forgotten too. But yeah, it really, and I think in the last like 2 minutes, I'm like, yeah, he's really putting me into like a different frame of mind.
Oh, it put me off. It really did. Like, I was like, I don't know how to feel. Like, and there's one shot you're forgetting to mention. It's, we see Hernan from the back. Right. And he's, I think he's like twitching or he's like talking to himself.
That's right. He almost looks like he has a seizure or something. Yeah.
Yeah. And that shot has like haunted me. Like I keep thinking about it and I'm just like, wait, what's going on with Hernan? And also like noticeably in that shot, like he's by himself, you know? So presumably maybe like Jessica's like left at this point, like she's gone back. And he's just left with himself and he's, you know, left with this, these symptoms, I guess, of like whatever spiritual intent I like think you're talking about. And I don't know, like you can read it one way. It's just like, again, it's like another thing that I think is like heartbreaking is like, you know, at the end of the day, whenever he's like back by himself, it's not like he chooses to experience these memories and chooses to experience like other people's memories. Like it kind of feels like it happens to him like reluctantly. And so you can kind of read that way, like where he's like stuck feeling this way. And I feel like you can also, well, I can't remember what I was going to say, but I think that's just one way you can read it. It's just a very sad way. Cause that I think it's mostly just like the lighting and the fact that the sound design is like absent from that. So like really like, and we see him speaking and just like what are we like, what is he saying, you know? Yeah. Joe like plays the sound design in this movie like brilliantly. Like I love it. Like they like whenever I was starving whenever I came into the theater to watch this, and because I knew the jump scare was like right away, like I bought like French fries and I was like very anxious. And I was chewing these French fries so slowly and so quietly. Like I didn't want to disturb anybody else. And the entire, I mean, for the 2 hours and like 16 minutes, like they were watching this movie and this shared experience, like with these people, like in the theater, like the whole theater was quiet. Like people did not want to say a word. People didn't want to make a noise. It's rare to just like watch a movie in the theater and just have everybody just be silent. And because the movie itself is quiet. So it really begs for your attention. It really begs for you to just, you know, stop talking and listen. And I think maybe that's another way that plays into the movie is the movie is asking us to engage with others. And to empathize with others. And I think by the because watching a film is a very passive act, you know. I mean, well, you can easily make it passive, but you can also be active by thinking about it, which typically like I try not to like think too much while I'm watching the movie. I really just try to take it in, but like sometimes my little brain is like going here and there. But like watching a film is a very passive act. And I think by the movie being very quiet, it's asking, it's respecting us by not being one of these, like all these films are just so loud. And I have you seen this like thing of this trend that people are picking up on where sound mixing in film and media today is like really bad.
And you can't hear dialogue and
it's just really loud and levels like keep jumping up and down. Like if you're watching a movie, let's say like a new Hulu movie that comes out, you're probably like turning up your volume and turning down your volume. Yeah, like constantly. Absolutely. And this movie is like asking you to respect its time. It's also respecting your time by just being very quiet and just be very lulling and playing out in real time. And it's very meditative. And I think by it, also, because it's quiet, I can hear movies on both sides of me.
That's what I was gonna say about loud movies. You can hear the other movies playing for sure.
And you know, it's just asking you to just really tune all these other noises out and just really just engage with it. You know, just please just stop talking, like stop making noise, stop thinking about whatever else. Just pay attention to me, and I am going to give you this experience. Like this movie is just very inviting. And
I think you're right.
I there's definitely an intention in that with Joe. I think 100%. I think, and you know, I'm not sure. You know, we talked about how this is a pandemic movie. Like, I'm not sure how much of this movie was already developed before COVID. I haven't done like too much research.
I don't know.
I did see that. I think either doing research for this movie or what inspired this movie was that Joe found out he has exploding head syndrome.
Yeah, where he I did hear that too. Yeah, I don't know if that's a real medical condition, but he hears stuff like this, right?
Yeah, and it's like a hallucination. Like it's your mind playing tricks on you, kind of like vertigo. Like you know, you're not actually falling over, but like your mind is like telling you that you're falling over because of like, let's say, like an infection. Yeah. So anyway, like I don't know how much of this movie was developed pre-COVID, but this feels like this movie just feels like a huge response to the way that COVID like affect like film watching and film going. And the fact that like, you know, people were already starting to be like, why? Well, first of all, like, I mean, you know, because of like inflation, like ticket prices are so high, and it's like, why should I pay $7 for like a medium-sized bag of popcorn? Like just the thought of like cost and like actually like going out to the movies and like kind of dressing up. Because I mean, something I think about is I watch movies very casually. Like, you know, I'm just right now I'm just wearing like a shirt and like some shorts, and this is how I'd go to the movie. Like I'm dressing casually, like because I'm comfortable. But like the act of going to movies like back then was like huge, because it was a huge exhibition, like huge attraction, and people would get dressed up. Like it was an event. It was like going to the theater, going to the opera, even though, you know, the movie is going to keep playing no matter what, and you can sit up and leave and talk, and the movie's not going to change because of that. So it's kind of like a one-sided relationship to it. But anyway, like I think just like the state of like cinema and the state of like going to the movies has just evolved and changed so much to where like people don't really go to the movies anymore. Like they you know, it's like, oh, I'm subscribed to these three like streaming services, so why should I go to the movie? I have plenty to watch at home. You know, I can rent nearly every movie, you know, that's imaginable. So why should I go to the movies? And you know, the neon like marketing strategy of like, you know, this movie will only play in theaters. You will not see this on a streaming service. You will not see this physically. You know, maybe you can torrent it, I don't know. But you have to go to the movies to watch this. You have to experience it in the theater. You can't pause the movie. You can't have other noises going on in the background, like in your house. Like you have to be in the theater
with other people too. Yeah,
exactly. Well, hopefully there's other people.
Yeah,
you know, thankfully they're I thought my theater was gonna be packed because I was like, I was like, everybody, like, this is the Arkansas premiere of this movie. Like
everyone's gonna come from Hot Springs and everything. But yeah, mine was like half. Maybe
I never buy my ticket advance, but I buy my ticket advance for this, like, because I thought it was gonna be packed, and it was not. But there was still like people in the theater with me anyway. Anyway, like, my huge rambling was going somewhere, but this movie is just a response to just like just the state of movie going, and I love that. Like I without a doubt, like this is just like, it's incredible. Like it's truly a pandemic movie, and I'm really happy that a movie like this can get such notoriety, such acclaim, and just get like such a reputation. Like I love telling people about this movie. Like you can't see this anywhere else. You have to see it in the theater. You know, it's incredible.
Yeah. So I'm hopeful that more people will check it out this week. And who knows, like, if this will come back to Little Rock one day, or how they're going to do all that. But it's kind of thing that if this really, because what they've said is they're just going to keep touring it indefinitely. So like,
hopefully
come back next year, or a year, 2 years later, I'm going to go see it again. Absolutely. So it's an interesting marketing strategy and all of that. But I think you're right. It's made to foster connection in the way that the movie is about too. And, you know, so like, as much as there's connection between people and connection between people and art, like in the cinema, yeah, it's like the reaching through the screen. I always think about Persona, the Bergman film.
Oh yeah.
Beautiful shot of at the beginning of this boy reaching to the screen. And I think it's like Bergman saying like, this connection is like what I want to make a movie about. This is the most interesting thing. So yeah, I think it hits that wavelength too.
Yeah. Like in Persona, like Bergman is really asking, like, you know, even though like these are actresses playing these fictional characters on screen, you will never meet these people. You will only see these characters for the span of this film, like 90 minutes or whatever. Can you empathize with them? Can you connect with them? Is it possible? Am I able to achieve that? Are you able to achieve empathy with people who are not real and the people you will only experience in this time span? brilliant. You know, it just, I love this art form. I love this medium.
I love it. That's great. Yeah. And, yeah. That's beautiful. Well, I'm trying to think if I had any other thoughts about this film. I think we can be close to wrapping up.
I could talk about this movie for another hour. Honestly, I will say I wrote down this one thing that I just want to say this.
I have a couple other little things too, but go ahead.
Sure. Very brave of this 2-hour film to have a third act that lasts 3 hours. Because once she goes to that village, I felt like we were there forever. The movie really slows down. Mm. It really plays in real time. And it paid off. Like it was so worth it. I thought Hernan was dead.
And she said that too, right? She says, how was it being dead or something, the way she says that, which I think that's the other thing too, is like the sleep idea, which is such a weird conversation because he says, I don't dream when I sleep. And she's like, show me, go to sleep right now. And he's like, okay. And
to this complete stranger too, he trusts her. She trusts him to just do this, you know? Mm-hmm. It's awesome.
And then so the other thing I was going to mention too is like there's also some stuff about like connection to nature, and that plays out in this scene too. But there's also the interesting shot where she is, it's like a terrarium or like there's like the big glass kind of cube inside of this building. And there's just it's not even like there's a tree or anything, it's just like some grass and some dirt, and then she's in this very modern, you know, building floor. And I think that just juxtaposing, here's like the natural world and man-made world, and I think
there's a barrier between the two.
Yeah, there you go. And I think it's about kind of appreciating the natural world in some way. I would say nature is a theme in all of his films too. And sort of like maybe we're more connected to nature than we realize or than we think about in our day-to-day life. But it's important that, you know, sometimes we cross that barrier maybe. But then too, when he falls asleep by the river, there's this long shot of his feet.
Yes.
And they're just kind of covered in grass. And so here he is like very much like one with nature. And then the flies are landing on his legs too, which maybe that the flies also sort of indicates death. And she says something about, how was it? And he says, what? And she says, death. And I think,
it's fine.
It's just, yeah.
His line is like, it's fine. I'm pretty sure. Right.
Right. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just back to the idea of sleep and being like another state of consciousness. So like when we're asleep, we might as well be dead, right? And in a way, like our bodies are doing something totally different than what we do on our during the daytime, but we are, you know, we do that every day and we don't think about what a significant thing that is. Maybe
the crazy thing about sleep is that, like, you know, we were talking about like all these actions that we perform as humans, like sleep. I was thinking about this last night because I couldn't really go to sleep, is that like we have to sleep. Like we have to do it to survive. Like we can't go without sleep. And whenever we go without sleep, like our lives become harder. And I think, like, you know, in this century, because of like all this technology and all these things we can stimulate our brain with and this and that, this and that, it's just, it's like, we almost like choose to not sleep. Like and also because for some people who, like, you know, maybe they're juggling like multiple jobs and they also have like a side passion that they want to pursue and they can only do it at night. So they have to like put off some sleep in order to do it. And they only get like 5 hours of sleep like every night, which is insane. But that's how some people have to survive. And it's crazy that like in this world, like almost ask us, it almost like requires us to sleep less than we would. I feel like people in the 1900s, even factory workers, I feel like they were getting like 8 hours of sleep, like no problem. Like they went to home, they laid down in bed, they were done for the day.
They're conked out, yeah.
And I think about sleep, like this movie, I think it's just questioning, like, you know, what does sleep mean to the modern person?
That's a really good point. Yeah, that's really interesting. And it's so funny because it's also something that we kind of rebel against. Like I have two kids and getting them to go to bed at night, it's like something you have to do, and they're like, no, you know. That's every kid does that. And and then you get to be a parent and you're like, I could sleep any moment of the day. But sleep is just such an interesting thing to explore in cinema too, and it's fascinating that it's something that he comes back to over and over. I wanted to mention one more thing about Hernan and that final shot you mentioned where he's like twitching or something. I had forgotten about that too, but I think I think at the moment my theory with that was like he's just exhausted from doing, you know, having this interaction with her. Like I think that's kind of what you were saying, is that like he doesn't necessarily choose when this happens, and maybe like this interaction with Jessica like took it out of him, and he's like, you know, de-stressing or something. But it also, like, yeah, it looks like he's muttering to himself. And then you start to think, does he have some sort of mental health problem that was undiagnosed or something? Oh, maybe he's sleepwalking. I didn't think of that either.
Well, he's sitting. Maybe. Never mind. Sorry. retract that.
But yeah, it's just interesting. So like we realize that he is, it's almost like, so like maybe instead of the word antenna, which is what the movie, I kept thinking about the word medium. Like, it's like he's a medium and like she's just realizing that she's a medium too. And is like able to see things in the spiritual realm or something like that. I don't know. It's a really interesting way to explore all these different themes. And yeah, it's a fascinating movie. I'm so glad to have, you know, discussed it with you for a little bit, because these things come into focus a little bit, you know, when you get out of your own head and collaborate like these jazz musicians, maybe to talk with someone else about it. So I really appreciate you coming on the show, and this has been great.
That's what they say about podcasting. It's right up there with playing jazz.
That's right. Yes, I love it. Thank you. Well, should we wrap it up? Any other final thoughts about Memoria?
Like, whenever I was going through my notes like 5 minutes ago, I just saw what I wrote down about archaeology and botany. I was like, oh, I can't believe I never brought that up.
Go for it.
Okay. Sorry, everybody, forgive me this. Skip forward 5 minutes. But you know, like her sister is an archaeologist, as you said, or you know, she's at least like related to the archaeology ward. I don't know. I left to like drink water like at this point. Whenever you know, and there's excavations going on, and the radio broadcast at the end, like it talks about how earthquakes have like uncovered like more bodies, like more remains.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that's like saying that, like, you know, and this is something I'm fascinated with, is like, I wish like we could almost tear down like a lot of infrastructure we've put up, or maybe just all of it, just to purge ourselves and just kind of rebuild again. Like infrastructure is like distancing us from each other. And like, are these tunnels like really helping us? Like, you know, we're plowing holes like through mountains just to get past them. And it's like, what are we doing to our earth? And, you know, like they're finding like these remains in the tunnel. And I almost feel like, you know, the alien like taking off is like the kind of the result of like them finding, or it's what causing them to like find these bodies. And I almost feel like it's like, not only are like aliens wanting us to kind of return back to form and like study where we came from and compare ourselves to now, I think like humans are also desiring that as well. So it's kind of like this like mutual interest and this mutual goal of like just discovering like more about our history and our ancestors and just connecting with each other, you know? Like, I mean, you know, she allows like Jessica to like, to examine and like prod at like the little girl's body. And, you know, initially I thought it was a little weird that she's sticking her finger, like directing the hole, but you know, by doing that, she's interacting directly with this organic material. And I'm going to use that sense to transition into the fact that like Jessica is a botanist, I believe, or something like that. And
yeah, that's right.
I'm sure you've picked up on this, but like there's several scenes where she's looking at plants that have been exposed to like some toxic or like viral infection. And I feel like that's kind of like another microcosm of like the whole movie, is that I think she's like studying these plants and she's studying like what's wrong with them and like how they get infected and what happens to them once they've been infected. Cause I think she's thinking about that with herself and like, is this sound, is this thud, is this an infection? Is this, am I eventually going to die? Am I poisoned, you know, mentally or physically or metaphysically or whatever? There's so much intention and there's so much, there's so many parallels like in this film. It's just, I just had to bring all that up. Like I was just thinking about that. I've been really deep diving on that.
The archaeology stuff, I think you're right that I hadn't really put this all together, but I think it probably is related to the spacecraft at the end, because so it's something that's also in the film Cemetery Splendor. It's exactly there where there's a building and they make a big deal about like it's built on top of like a sort of a graveyard, and there's so are the spirits now affecting us, is kind of something that that film explores. So I think very much this movie is like, okay, we've dug this tunnel and we found these bodies and we've somehow disrupted. And maybe that's why she starts hearing the sound. Maybe that's like, maybe that's why, whether the, whenever, if the aliens are in the past or whatever, it's somehow we've like disrupted what's going on there. So yeah, I think that it's like somehow the spiritual realm is upended and it's in chaos a little bit, and that maybe that's what kind of kicks off the sound for her in a way or something. Yeah, interesting. Well,
lots to think about. Open to interpretation. Brilliant filmmaker, knows his compositions, knows his sound design. I can't wait to see more.
Yeah, I think you're really in for a treat with the two that I've seen, and I'm excited to dig into some of his older ones too. A few of them are streaming on Canopy, which is the free library streaming service.
I'm on Canopy. I love Canopy.
So just for listeners who may not,
I'm sorry.
But that's, I just realized I was looking up where can I stream some of these others, and a couple of them are there that I haven't seen. So do that, listeners. Go see Memoria in the next 3 days, and or you know, if you live in another city, check. I think it's memoria.film is the website where you can see the schedule of where it's going to be. Definitely worth your time. And all right, I think we can wrap up there. Thank you so much, Jack, for joining the show today.
I can confirm it is memoria.film. Just want to confirm for everybody, it is memoria.film.
Perfect. Thanks for that. I'll link that in the show notes. So, well, yeah, cool. Thanks again for your time this evening. I really appreciate it. And we'll have to have you back next time. Yeah, you mentioned, you know, some filmmaker that you have a better grasp on, or like one of your favorites, you know, when they have a new film. Love to have you on for that.
I'll let you know. I'll keep you in touch.
Good deal. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Next week on the show, I've got a discussion of the new film from George Miller. That's 3,000 Years of Longing, I mentioned earlier, which stars Tilda Swinton and Idris Elba. That one is now playing in theaters if you want to check it out before that podcast comes out. Then the following week, we'll be finishing up our series on the French New Wave. We're looking at the filmmaker Jacques Demy and his film The Umbrellas of Cherbourg, which I've never seen, but it's streaming on HBO and Criterion, I believe. So you can check that out in the meantime.
I'm just going to tell you right now that movie's amazing. I love it.
All right, great.
It's awesome.
I've heard so many good things, and yeah, I wanted to get that one in for this series for sure. We're just done four films with it. But well, with that, thank you so much for listening to Arthouse Garage. We've got a few years worth of episodes now. You can hear all of those in your podcast app of choice. Our theme music is by composer Paul Hunefeld. You can learn more at appallingproductions.com. If you want to support Arthouse Garage, become a patron over at patreon.com/arthousegarage, or find a link in the show notes. You can also buy an Arthouse Garage t-shirt at arthousegarage.com/shop. If you want to support us without spending any money, you can leave a rating or review in your podcast app, and that is hugely helpful. You can also stay in the loop about Arthouse Garage and the films we're covering by subscribing to our email newsletter. That is at arthousegarage.com/subscribe. You can also email me directly, andrew@arthousegarage.com. And of course, follow on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd. Just search at Arthouse Garage in all those places, or find links in the show notes. And that will do it for this episode. Thank you again so much for listening. And until next time, keep it snob free.